from deep inside your radio.
Back from State College, Pennsylvania, and thanks to everybody who showed up for the world premiere of Richard Thompson's Cabaret of Souls. And thank you to Richard for including me in that amazing show. And something's humming. All right, then. I guess it doesn't know the words. Ladies and gentlemen, work to clean out nuclear waste from underground tanks and to build a plant to treat the waste at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. That's not where Indians live. That's where nuclear waste live. Kind of like an Indian reservation, but without the casino. Anyway, that work was stopped 31 times over 9 years to address safety or construction quality issues. That's according to the Government Accountability Office. They say more work needs to be done to track the costs of the work stoppages. Depending what causes a work stoppage and how long it lasts, some stoppages increase already substantial cleanup costs. Huh. The Department of Energy is advised to establish criteria for when contractors should track the causes and costs of work stoppages. And these criteria should recognize the importance of worker and nuclear safety. It's a big job, and apparently nobody's got to do it. And, ladies and gentlemen, the worst of the worst, Jawad Jabbar Sadkhan al-Salani was quietly given his freedom this week by the U.S. government, allowed to exit Guantanamo Bay. Says his lawyer, he should never have been there. He was never charged with a crime after being labeled an enemy combatant. As a result of claims he'd been associated with the Taliban, he denied the charges, was not allowed to call witnesses to refute the claims. Nobody ever alleged he was with Al-Qaeda or was involved in any hostilities against the United States. He was transferred to the custody of the Iraqi government. That was a decision made by a task force created by the president and came days before a federal court hearing in Washington on a habeas corpus petition filed by his pro bono attorneys. Say his lawyers, he's an innocent refugee from Basra, Iraq, who was imprisoned at Guantanamo for over 7 years without any charges ever filed against him. He has 4 children, the youngest of whom he has never met. His lawyers say he and his family fled Saddam Hussein in 1996, sought refuge in Iran and Pakistan. The family sought asylum in Pakistan but could not obtain it, sought to return to Iran, but were left stranded by guides in Afghanistan, where he was turned over to U.S. forces in January for a ransom. After he couldn't pay a bribe to supporters of a notorious warlord, he ended up in Guantanamo. Nearly 6 years ago, the U.S. military recommended he be released from Guantanamo after apparently lengthy interrogations, but the Bush administration would not follow that recommendation. The worst of the worst, ladies and gentlemen. Got to put him somewhere. And now, it's the big weekend.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand in the digital wonderland.
I feel so archaic broadcasting in analog. Yes, you know that the analog signals of American television stations were switched off on Friday, June 12th. The New York Times headlined a switchover that went smoothly. All right, then. Let's check that out. At a makeshift phone bank local television station set up in Seattle, one volunteer, an engineering coordinator, said half an hour after the hotline opened, "We're inundated. It's a zoo." Calls came in from a variety of questions, from cable customers who just wanted to double-check they're all set, to free TV users who were told by operators they'd need a converter box. The hotline in Seattle fielded 340 calls in the first 4 hours. The New York Times, under the headline, "Smooth Transition," said the FCC's calls on Friday tripled those of Thursday, which had itself set a record. Says one executive producer at Seattle television station, to call her. You've done all the right things. You may be out of options. Reception is the problem, he said. It's the thorn in everybody's side, since digital signals are less forgiving than analog signals. Oh, why didn't they tell you? He did. A volunteer said many of her callers were elderly people who couldn't climb onto their roofs to adjust their antennas as recommended. All right. That's Seattle. Now here are some first-person reports. Daniel writes, Dear Harry, I've long heard you talk about the problems with TV's digital transition. That's why 10 months ago I was pleasantly surprised when, after purchasing a new high-def TV, I scanned for digital channels and not only received all the standard channels and beautiful digital, but also extra digital channels. For 10 months, I had no problems receiving all these digital broadcasts over a pair of rabbit ears. On Friday, June 12th, the day of the transition, suddenly Digital Channel 2.1, CBS in Los Angeles, and ABC Los Angeles, and Public Television Los Angeles have disappeared from the airwaves in my neighborhood. I have a second TV with a digital converter box attached, and after repeated checking, these same channels show no signal, even though I never had any trouble receiving them before on that TV. The FCC, of course, recommends that you keep rescanning because digital channels move. Isn't that cute? So Daniel writes again. Actually, I believe the FCC said cable and dish users would be unaffected by the digital changeover. My cable system, Time Warner's inability to keep the same channels for digital 2, 7, and 9, is surely a failure on their part, as they can assign any signal to the channel of their choice. My issue is strictly over the air, as I'm on antenna. This morning, after discovering digital 13 and 11 missing as well, doesn't make any difference, they're owned by News Corp, I decided to take your advice, he's talking to me, and rescan. All the missing digital signals returned. They never told us that if we'd already been enjoying digital TV over the air, we'd have to rescan in order to retain those channels. Rescan. Keep rescanning. Moss writes, Harry, I dutifully applied for a subsidized upgrade through our local PBS station. I got our digital tuner with our government coupon a few weeks ago. Plugging it in, I noticed there was no on-off switch, meaning it was a new vampire load on the power grid. Well, at least we were getting multiple signals per old channel. Change day came, I decided to explore the new frontier. PBS and a number of other channels had dropped out. The one channel I did get featured an interview with a young woman sharing her enthusiasm for her new career in the porn industry. I wrote it off to first date jitters and decided to wait a while and give everyone a chance to get it together. That evening, I returned and switched my TV on with great anticipation. The new digital tuner's transformer had apparently burned out. I no longer receive any signals. Tom writes, I'm on my third HDTV set, but watch little conventional TV, mostly DVD and Netflix. When I do watch, it's over the air for sports. I thought I was prepared for the big switchover, but was surprised when I rescanned, clue, the day after, but could not receive my local ABC and CBS affiliates. Reading a blog or two, discovered that the affiliates also switched from UHF to low-power VHF. Back to the past. No warning, no reception for over-the-air folks. Don't know where Tom is located. Another Tom. Harry, I finally got fed up with pixelated reception and intermittent sound on my digital TV and called the FCC hotline. I've spent approximately $150 and many hours following the instructions from AntennaWeb.com to the letter. I bought a gigantic antenna and installed it on the roof and pointed it directly along the azimuth provided by the website, and still the reception is sketchy at best. Pretty good on some days, not so good on others, terrible on some. And I don't live in the boonies. I live in the middle of Atlanta, surrounded by broadcast towers, none of which are more than 8 miles from my house. Analog, I got along fine with rabbit ears. I waited till transition day to call the hotline in the faint hope that the two stations I want to watch, both public TV, have not heretofore been broadcasting at full power. I called the FCC. I spoke to a friendly woman who told me that it sounded like I'd done all that I was supposed to do. Then a lot of people had called and told her very similar stories to mine. She said I should wait until tomorrow and rescan my set, but she didn't seem to think it would do much good. Then she told me she herself had had the same difficulty and had to move my antenna all over the house without being able to get adequate reception. I finally just got cable, she told me. So there you have it, Tom writes, what the FCC is really suggesting we all do. P.S. I already have cable, but I'm tired of paying their monopolistic prices. And James writes, Here's a curious experience. When we went digital with the three TVs in our home, I chose to stick with over-the-air rather than pay DirecTV another $10 a month for local stations. I was very happy. With a couple of exceptions, everything was fine, and I kept hearing that stations' digital transmissions were not at full power yet because of the need to power analog signals as well, so I reasoned once the analog goes off, digital reception should be even better. This morning, James writes, I checked all three sets, and without exception, reception was decidedly worse, especially for the VHF stations. I get KNBCs in Los Angeles, apparently, clearly on all three sets, but KCBS and KABC, to name two, are completely unattainable. Ditto KCAL. I wonder what in the world happened. I would not have been surprised to see my digital reception stay the same as before, but worse? No, he lives in Orange County. Rescan, babe. Same thing as Daniel. Or call the FCC. And to make sure that everybody understands how this is being covered, the Los Angeles dog trainer writes an article quoting the FCC saying that you'll benefit in many ways from the digital transition. And they quote, among other people, me. Here's the Los Angeles Times quoting me. Quote, I've been thumping this tub for a long time about how crazy it is that we're being forced to upgrade, he complained on his Le Show last Saturday. Memo to the Los Angeles Times. Hello, it's Sunday. I know, all the days beginning with S look alike. Hello, welcome to Le Show. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome to this edition of the show. So I feel like I want to. I feel as if I want to. Thank you. Weigh in on this whole Dave and Sarah controversy that's been clogging the airwaves. First, I'm sure Dave really regrets that his writers didn't write a better joke. Because he says now he was talking about the 18-year-old daughter, but that's not the daughter that Sarah Palin had at the ball game, and the joke was about the daughter at the ball game getting knocked up by Alex Rodriguez, who's a Yankee player, and they were at a Yankee game. So Sarah Palin wasn't making an incredible leap of misunderstanding. But I must say, I'm delighted that Governor Palin has decided to make a public show of the fact that she has no sense of humor. And I'm not saying that critically. I applaud that. I've been repulsed for too long, as you may have, by the unseemly spectacle of politicians getting into bed with so-called humorists or comedians. For the former, it helps to bolster their dubious credentials as ordinary guys and gals, and for the latter, it's ratings. In the humble opinion of this host of this broadcast, humorists and politicians should be adversaries. It's good for the country. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
You know, when he sings it that way, it almost sounds nice. I said almost. Deadline Bonn. Climate change will force millions of people to leave their homes to flee rising seas and drought over the coming decades, requiring a new plan for mass migration, according to a report published this week. Because we've been dealing with migration so well up to now. Funds are needed to help migrants escape natural disasters, which will worsen threatening political stability, said the report published by the UN, the UN University, the hell is that? CARE International and Columbia University. Environmentally induced migration and displacement has the potential to become an unprecedented phenomenon, both in terms of scale and scope, says the study. In coming decades, climate change will motivate or force millions of people to leave their homes in search of viable livelihoods and safety. The report says that climate change science is too new to forecast exact numbers of migrants, but it cited an estimate by the International Organization for Migration, the IOM, 200 million environmentally induced migrants by 2050. And especially vulnerable areas of the world include island states such as Tuvalu and the Maldives, dry areas such as Africa's Sahel and in Mexico, and delta regions in the Bangladesh, Vietnam, and Egypt. It's not the Bangladesh, it's Bangladesh. I made a mistake. In the densely populated Ganges, Mekong, and Nile River deltas, a sea level rise of 1 meter could affect 23.5 million people and reduce the land currently under intensive agriculture by at least 1.5 million hectares. 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 All right, then. Once again, these metric measurements raise their ugly heads. Hectares. The Greenland ice sheet is melting faster than expected, according to a new study led by a University of Alaska at Fairbanks researcher and published in the journal Hydrological Processes. You know, the kid keeps throwing it in the water, so I never get to read it. Study results indicate that the ice sheet may be responsible for nearly 25% of global sea rise in the past 13 years. The study also shows that seas now are rising by more than 3 millimeters a year, 50% faster than the average for the 20th century. From 1985 to 2007, overall precipitation of the ice sheet decreased while surface ablation, a combination of evaporation, melting, and calving of the ice sheet, increased. Since 1995, the ice sheets have lost an average of 265 cubic kilometers a year, which has contributed to about 0.7 millimeters a year in global sea level rise. You just have to go metric to understand this stuff, I guess. Damon Matthews, a professor in Concordia University's Department of Geography, Planning, and the Environment, has found a direct relationship, this may be new, between carbon dioxide emissions and global warming. Matthews, together with colleagues from Victoria in Australia and the UK, used a combination of global climate models and historical climate data to show there is a simple linear relationship between total cumulative carbon emissions and global temperature change. These will be published in the upcoming issue of Nature. Until now, it's been difficult to estimate how much climate will warm in response to a given carbon dioxide emissions scenario because of the complex interactions between human emissions, carbon sinks, atmospheric concentrations, and temperature change. Matthews and colleagues show that despite these uncertainties, each emission of carbon dioxide results in the same effect on global temperature, regardless of when or over what period of time the emission occurs. These findings mean we can now say if you emit that ton of carbon dioxide, it will lead to point, and then a bunch of zeros, 1.5 degrees of global temperature change. If we want to restrict global warming to no more than 2 degrees, we must restrict total carbon emissions to a little more than half a trillion tons of carbon. We'll work on that. I'll work on that this weekend. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, continues to surprise and delight, mainly surprise. Most large military installations of the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan have large uncovered pits to dispose of and burn waste. More than 400 people who served in Iraq and Afghanistan now say they got sick from exposure to toxic materials burnt in those pits. One such giant pit at the largest base in Iraq has garnered the most attention. Critics fear that soldiers, contractors, and Iraqis have been exposed to cancer-causing dioxins, arsenic, carbon monoxide, and hazardous medical waste. Won't you? Making it nice wherever we go. Who operates the pits? Goes without saying. Kellogg Brown and Root, formerly part of Halliburton. Lawsuits are being filed across the country against KBR. They are the pits. Plaintiffs want them to cover the costs of medical monitoring, future medical expenses, and other damages. KBR, this will surprise you, has denied any liability. The Disabled American Veterans is compiling a national database of sicknesses related to exposure to the burn pits. About 415 people so far have contacted DAV to say they believe they're sick from the exposure. About 80 of them have leukemia, lymphoma, or brain cancer. About 200 have pulmonary disorders, including asthma, chronic coughs, sleep apnea, and allergy-like symptoms. The rest say they suffer headaches and chronic fatigue. The Department of Defense so far has maintained that burn pits pose no long-term health risks. I guess the assumption is going to be that people die before it gets long-term. But an epidemiologist, Shira Kramer, says at a congressional press conference there's a strong link between burning toxic materials and disease and sickness in humans. At Joint Base Balad in Iraq, the central logistics hub for the U.S. military in that country, a giant pit was for more than 4 years the only place to dispose of trash, including plastics, food, and medical waste. The pit was spewing acrid smoke over the base, including its housing and hospitals. Military Times was the first to report about the burn pit and the potential problems arising from the toxic plumes. According to their report, one reason many soldiers suspect the burn pit to be the cause of their health problems is a widely circulated 2006 memo in which a military environmental engineer cited a still classified study labeling the pit, quote, "the worst environmental site I have personally visited," unquote. The memo, written by Lieutenant Colonel Darren Curtis, a bioenvironmental engineering flight commander, concluded, quote, "there is an acute health hazard for individuals," unquote. Still classified. You were making it nice. On a totally different subject, ladies and gentlemen, because we like to give you conceptual whiplash here on the broadcast. The broadcasting industry in this United States and its chief lobby, the National Association for Broadcasters, have been busily fighting against a proposal. And now I speak with a leg in two camps here, because I am a broadcaster, but I also involved in musical projects, and I co-own some copyrights. So the broadcasters have been fighting a proposal for years. I'm going to backtrack now. For years, ever since the 1940s, broadcasters have had to pay what's called a compulsory license to a couple of organizations for the privilege of playing recordings of copyrighted compositions. That is, they pay for the right to use the music and lyrics. But the performers who perform those compositions get nothing from the broadcaster. So now there's an attempt to change that and create a so-called performance royalty. So the people whose records you hear get a little taste, as well as the songwriters and publishers. As I say, the broadcasters in this country have been fighting that tooth and nail. Meanwhile, down in Australia, something very different has been happening. Cafe and restaurant patrons may soon be eating in silence. Australia's largest record companies are proposing to increase the cost of background music played in public up to 2,000 times. Could also make gym membership more expensive unless fitness classes use artists excluded by Australian copyright laws, including Elvis Presley and Beethoven. So this is 750 record companies in Australia, which had already gotten a 15-time increase in the cost of music for the nightclub industry. So now they're targeting eateries and gyms. So the only people being left out, apparently, are the performers. Speaking of which, the Associated Press says several radio stations are alleged to have conspired to take a top-selling artist's new single off the air. A complaint filed with the FCC says recording artists are being threatened and intimidated for supporting the performance royalty. There are hints the blacklisted or boycotted performer may be Bono. He spoke in support of the effort to require radio stations to pay musicians royalties soon after several stations within a major radio broadcast group notified the artist label they would no longer play his single on the air. Calls and emails by the AP to a spokeswoman for Bono were not immediately returned. Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, whenever you hear recording companies talk about artists' rights, the appropriate response is a polite giggle.
And they can pick more notes than a number of eights on a Tennessee eight hill. There's 1,352 guitar cases in Nashville, and any one of them packs of guitar can play twice as better than I will.
Nashville can
play clean as country water.
Nashville can
play wild as Mountain Dew.
Nashville can
been playing since his baby.
Sound the tunes on the tube and they blasted the sky high. Then the record man said, everyone is Yellowstone record from Nashville, and up north there ain't nobody buys them. And I said, but I will. And it was
Nashville can
play clean as country water.
Nashville.
Nashville.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, the United States Army Corps of Engineers, which, as you know, if you've been following this broadcast, or my blog posts at Huffington Post, or the work of Dr. Bob B., Dr. Ray Seed, Dr. Ivor Van Heerden, if doing any of that, you're aware that the Corps of Engineers was responsible through malfeasance for the flooding of New Orleans in 2005. Well, they got a whole new thing going on now. They're going to prevent any future mishaps with their levees across the nation by chopping down trees. This is from the Associated Press. The Army Corps of Engineers is on a mission to chop down every tree in the country that grows within 15 feet of a levee, including oaks and sycamores in Louisiana, willows in Oklahoma, and cottonwoods in California. The Corps is concerned that the tree's roots could undermine barriers meant to protect low-lying communities from catastrophic floods. And then the AP says, like the ones caused by Hurricane Katrina, by which they mean caused by the failure of the levees, which had nothing to do with trees. Read the reports. They were caused by construction and design failures. Thanks, Associated Press. Anyway, the AP survey of levee projects nationwide shows that the Corps of Engineers wants to eliminate all trees along more than 100,000 miles of levees. Environmentalists and civil engineers insist the trees pose little or no risk and actually may help stabilize levee soil. Thousands of trees have been felled already. The literature on the presence of vegetation indicates it may actually strengthen a levee, says Andrew Levesque, senior engineer, King County, Washington, where the Corps wants trees removed on the six rivers considered vital to salmon populations. After Katrina, the Corps began sending hundreds of letters to levee districts across the nation, ordering them to cut down, quote, unwanted woody vegetation. This prospect could cost many of the levee districts millions of dollars in timber clearing expenses. Aha! It's about money. Inspectors began an inventory of the levee system and told districts to fill in animal burrows and patch up erosion. If they fail to comply, the agencies risk higher flood insurance premiums and a loss of federal funding. So it's about money. The Corps' new edict is regarded as a major change in policy, says a senior policy expert with California Friends of the River. Something that's cheap and inexpensive is a chainsaw, he says. After months of negotiations with landowners in Columbia, Louisiana, on an 18th-century French colonial estate, the Corps agreed to let the district, the local levee district, chop down only a few dozen of the hundreds of trees near the levee. We don't know how long the trees have been here, but they've never caused any problem up till now, says one resident of the plantation. Of the trees already cut down, they didn't even find a buyer for the wood or the pulp, he said. State wildlife officials in California complained when the Corps sought to clear oaks, cottonwoods, and willows from 1,600 miles of levees in the Central Valley, saying the policy would destroy habitat. The Corps eventually dropped the idea. Okay, then. Experts outside the Corps say a tree has never caused a U.S. levee to fail. If trees are a problem, why aren't we having problems with them? Asks George Sills, who formerly worked for the Corps' Engineer Research and Development Center in Vicksburg. There's never been a documented problem, he says, with a tree. In a 2008 email, Sills told the Corps to remove his name from an updated vegetation policy paper he worked on for the Corps. He said he ran analyses that looked at the possibility that the trees caused any of the levee failures in New Orleans, and, quote, it was determined that trees did not lead to any of these failures, unquote. Current Corps officials see it differently. The agency does not know whether a tree has ever directly caused a levee failure, says its current dam and levee expert, but he noted that dam failures have been linked to trees, including a 1970s collapse in Georgia. A treeless levee, they say, is also easier to inspect and repair during the flood. This is something they've dreamed up. It's like they're hell-bent to write up some negative report, says a levee commissioner in Oklahoma. United States Army Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen, working to keep working. And now, the apologies of the week. Chicago Bulls star Derrick Rose is moving quickly to tamp down a growing controversy over a photo circulating online of him flashing gang signs. In a statement released this week, shortly after the Chicago Tribune and other news outlets reported on the photo, Rose called the picture a bad joke made during his 1 year at the University of Memphis. Well, next time, stay the other 3 years and you'll figure it out. And strongly denied he's ever been involved in gang activity. This photo of me, he says, was taken at a party I attended in Memphis while I was in school there. It was meant as a joke, a bad one. I now admit, I want to emphatically state now and forever that Derrick Rose is anti-gang, anti-drug, and anti-violence. In posing for this picture, I'm guilty of being young, naive, and of using extremely poor judgment. I sincerely apologize to all my fans for my mistake. I urge all my young fans to stay away from gangs. In the picture, Rose was throwing signs for the Gangster Disciples Nation, a prominent Chicago gang with tens of thousands of members, a dominant presence in the neighborhood where Rose grew up. Or at least explains how he knew the signs. An assistant manager at a Vancouver Walmart has apologized after she failed to call 911 when an 81-year-old man fell and broke his shoulder in the store's parking lot. Robert Mixter is recovering. The fall occurred outside the Walmart. The assistant manager emerged from the store after the man fell. She asked family members to fill out an accident form, asked to call 911. She allegedly refused, saying it was against company policy. Two corporate spokesmen for Walmart confirmed that the company's policy says store employees are expected to call 911 if someone needs medical assistance. Their version is the assistant manager asked family members if she could use their cell phone to call 911. That was an error, said the spokesman, adding the company would have preferred that she use her radio to ask employees inside to call 911. The assistant manager has apologized to the family for not calling 911. But the call was cheaper. Had been made, because it was made, it would have been made at Walmart. Photos have surfaced, Dateline Oklahoma City, photos have surfaced that appear to show Jessica Alba defacing Oklahoma City property with posters of a great white shark. Police are investigating. Police discovered the posters aimed at raising awareness about the species' declining numbers glued to a downtown bridge and elsewhere, including a billboard displaying a United Way ad. She's in Oklahoma filming a movie. She's now released a statement of apology. I got involved in something I should have had no part of. I realize I should have used better judgment, and I regret not thinking things through before I made a spontaneous and ill-advised decision to let myself get involved with the people behind this campaign. I sincerely apologize to the citizens of Oklahoma City and the United Way for my involvement in this incident. Unquote, her statement. A Sacramento radio team, here we go again, issued an on-air apology for comments that upset people in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. LGBT to you. The on-air personalities of the Rob Arnie Dawn Show have been off the air this week after heated reaction to comments made about transgender teens on that broadcast. Disc jockeys Rob Williams and Arnie States labeled transgender people freaks, weirdos, and drama queens. quote. Our audience made clear we had made it seem that we endorse or allow or encourage the harming and abuse of children, the bullying and vilifying of those who are different, and singling out of transgenders for harm, said Williams in a statement. I want you to very clearly understand that I proudly and fully apologize for these statements completely. A proud apology, ladies and gentlemen. That may be a Le Show first. He said he was sorry that the show made it sound as if the disc jockeys tolerate harm or mocking of teens. If you hurt a child in any way, Williams said, if you joke about hurting a child in any way, if you advocate or tolerate hurting a child in any way, the Rob and Arnie and Dawn show will stand against you. Hear that, Dave? He said the show will continue to be a forum for honest... They have been labeled intolerant by transgender advocates and others. Local and national businesses, including McDonald's, AT&T, have pulled advertising from the show or said they plan to discontinue ads. You mean it's about money? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, how's the economy doing? Well, depends whom you ask. Lawrence Summers, the head of the President's Economic Council, former head of Harvard, reputedly a brilliant man, although according to a profile at the beginning of the week in the New York Times, prickly, gave a speech this week where he warned against falling for believing in, quote, false dawns, unquote. He said there will be false dawns as we try to recover from whatever this thing is that we're in. That's Lawrence Summers. Meanwhile, Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, has another job. Now, obviously, ladies and gentlemen, when you're the out party, you say things look crappy. When you're in power and it's on you, you say, little new growths, little promising shoots. So Timothy Geithner is proposing new caps on executive pay. The banks, well, the bank stocks are going up. Mainly because, according to what I've read, they're doing so well borrowing money from the government at no cost and then lending it out at interest. That's a good deal. I'd like to get into that business. Can I? No. Okay. And as I say, Timothy Geithner's job, unlike Larry Summers, is not to warn of false dawns, but to talk up the glimmers of hope.
Oh, yeah. That's what I say. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, listen here. Empty storefronts filling up the malls. Foreclosure man's making lots more calls. You've still got a job, but your paycheck shrank. You can only get a loan if you're a bank. Only get a loan if you're a bank. But there are glimmers of hope, yeah. Glimmers of hope, rays of sunlight. Say yes when the world says no. It's a vision that shivers, business that simmers, lively as a couch full of David Schwimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in those glimmers of hope. Bask in those glimmers of hope. That's what I say. Oh, yeah. Say it with me one more time. One more time. Oh, yeah. Now, listen here. The deficit gets huger by the day. Can we ever really make it go away? There are bailouts for the rich, layoffs for the rest. You've got the stress you must have
failed the test. You've got the stress, you must have failed the test. But there are glimmers of hope.
Yeah.
Glimmers of hope.
Yeah.
The shower is cold,
yeah,
but they are slipping you soap.
Yeah.
A way to deal when no way you can cope. It's no pool but two skimmers. School but no primers. Slicker than a lane full of Olympic swimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in those glimmers of hope. That's what I say, glimmers of hope. Less than your car, and then I'm making autos near where you are. A big night out, it's gonna be a dollar meal. Feels like no one knows the way you feel. Yeah, it feels like no one knows the way you feel. But wait a minute, there are glimmers of hope. Glimmers of hope. Slippery,
yeah,
even though it's a slope.
Yeah.
More reasons to smile, less reasons to mope. It's a vision that shivers, business that simmers, lively as a couch full of David Schwimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in the glimmers of hope. That's what I say, glimmers of hope.
Glimmers of hope. Glimmers of hope. Glimmers of hope.
Get into it.
I'm gonna join them, I'm gonna tell them.
Get into it, baby.
Get into it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, inside the bubble, here's what we're being told from the Washington Post. Progress in Pakistan's two-month-old military campaign against insurgents in the Swat Valley has provoked Pentagon optimism that Pakistan government forces will soon move decisively into the more rugged frontier region where al-Qaeda's leaders are based, perhaps curtailing a wave of suicide bombings in Afghanistan and Pakistan. The defense officials struck a laudatory tone in describing the prospects for military success in Pakistan. That's what being heard inside the bubble. Now, news from outside the bubble. From the Sunday Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, Pakistan's military offensive will backfire and fuel more extremism and bomb attacks, says politician, former cricketer Imran Khan. I have never been so depressed in my life, he said. Pakistan is on a suicidal course. He has been branded pro-Taliban for speaking out against the military operation, which has driven 2.5 million people from their homes in Pakistan. I'm not pro-Taliban, he says, but my point is, shouldn't we have looked at other options? How do you justify using heavy artillery, helicopter gunships, and F-16 fighters in civilian areas? Who in the world does this? Meanwhile, all the top Taliban leadership have escaped, he says. It's so inhuman what they've done. It will backfire. Unquote. Khan pointed out the launch of the operation coincided with the Pakistan president's visit to Washington, after which the U.S. agreed to a 5-year deal worth $1.5 billion a year. Was this operation to save the people of Swat or to get dollars from the Americans, he asked. Only 10 days earlier, Parliament had passed a resolution endorsing a peace deal in Swat with the Taliban. Why was there no discussion? A military operation should have been the last resort, said Khan. He insisted Pakistan would never contain extremism as long as American troops remained across the border in Afghanistan. Hatred of America, he says, is much more than hatred of the Taliban. And Khan asks, how do we look after these refugees? Already you see the anger. This is a very sorry chapter in Pakistan's history. Also outside the bubble, from Agence France-Presse, barely a peep is heard from most Twitter members, despite the soaring popularity of the microblogging service, according to a pair of freshly released reports. Nearly 55% of 4.5 million Twitter members have never tweeted, that is to say, written anything. More than half of Twitter members have no followers, and about 55% of them aren't following anyone else's messages. A study by Harvard Business School researchers concluded that 10% of Twitter members account for 90% of tweets. And that does include Larry King, or whoever's writing him. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. We'll be right back. circuit for our listeners in Chicagoland. Judith Owen, whom you heard earlier on this broadcast, at The Space in Evanston this very Wednesday night. That is all. And that's going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide through Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com on the mighty 104 in Berlin, available on your smartphone via stitcher.com. Available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a free truncated podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like turning off the analog of this broadcast if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. And don't forget to rescan. Oh, yeah, Spinal Tap on the Tonight Show, Monday evening. At the end of the show, of course. At least we're on. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, of course, as always, to Pam Halstead. The mailing address for this broadcast and playlist of the music heard here on, almost always available, at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.